It is awfully comforting to think that we have God all figured out. We've read the scriptures, we've been preached at for years, we feel secure in the knowledge that we are God's chosen people. Yes, we even have papal infallibility. That's got to mean a direct line to the Almighty, right? Yeah, we've got God pretty much figured out. We know what God wants from us. 10 commandments, 614 commands of the Levitical law, the golden rule. It's all documented. How hard could it be to figure God out? Well, it's a little more complicated than that. It was once said that God created humanity in God's own image, and we have been returning the favor ever since. There's always that temptation to want to recreate God in our image, or at least to start to lose the distinction between the two. But the fact is, God is God, and we are not God. That may seem staringly obvious, but it's also something that we tend to forget and have done so all through human history. If you read Genesis chapters 2 and 3, the original sin of humanity, according to that story, is eating from the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. And the serpent says, "You will become like gods," which, of course, was a lie. But symbolically, eating from that tree is taking to ourselves the judgment that ultimately must belong only to God. And it's not just that only God should judge, but ultimately only God can judge. Because only God sees all perspectives and knows all hearts and transcends everything that is insufficient in us. God's ways are not our ways, and God's thoughts are not our thoughts. And that's a good thing, too, because our ways are imperfect, and our thoughts tend to run to things like The Real Housewives of Atlanta and Candy Crush Saga and that aerosol spray cheese in a can. What is that stuff? Sometime I will tell you about the 12 convenience foods of the apocalypse, but not today. We are not God, and God's ways are not our ways. Not only are God's ways alien to us, but they are better than our ways. We tend to look out for our own interests, or what we think our own interests are. And God has no need of that because God has no needs at all. As a result, our justice is imperfect. And God's justice, though it is perfect, is incomprehensible to us. We are so often caught up in our own need for revenge that we think that we know what justice means. In today's gospel, every fiber of our being tells us that each worker's compensation should be in proportion to their labor. But that isn't the way that God works. And this is a problem for us, because people today, even today, presume that God gives good things to good people and punishes the wicked people with misfortune. Because anything else wouldn't be fair, would it? We would like to believe that everyone should get the same thing, or, at minimum, that each should get what they need, or what we think they need. But that isn't the way that God works. Look around, and it's pretty clear that bad things happen to good people, and that sometimes bad people get away with evil deeds. And so we can only conclude that handing out goodies as reward for good behavior is not how God is dealing with us. Ultimately, this parable in today's gospel is about God's generosity and not fairness. This is why so many of us seem to find God's mercy threatening. But it's not about fairness, it's about God's generosity and mercy. There is something much deeper going on in the administration of the universe. And this is what I think is going on. God, I don't think, is not especially interested in our version of justice. God's justice is built on compassion and generosity and mercy and the ability to see perfectly all that is. So it's no wonder that it often doesn't make sense to us. But read the Gospels again. Jesus does not tell his disciples to be careful how everything gets divided up. And he explicitly rejects an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. Instead, Jesus tells us to deal with each other with a love that is unconditional. And we're still learning how to do that. And God continues to challenge us to love more deeply and to live lives of service and commitment. And that is a scary challenge because our love and our commitment, like our justice, are imperfect. As you may know, before I came here, I was the Paulus Fathers Director of Vocations. And my job was to locate those men that God is calling to priesthood in the Paulus Fathers, to help them discern God's will, and, if everything works out, to facilitate their application to the Paulus Fathers. And one of the conversations that I ended up having over and over again was the "I'm not worthy" conversation. When one senses a call to ministry and priesthood and religious life, it comes with a call to take seriously the challenge of the gospel to love unconditionally and to devote one's life to that kind of service. And who is worthy of that? Who could possibly live up to that? It's scary to think about a way of life that challenges you to be better and to do better. And ultimately, that is the challenge for all of us as we are seeking God's will for whatever life God is calling us to. Of course, for us, it's impossible. But God's ways are not our ways. Just as in the gospel, God appears to reward the workers who came late, God also, through his grace, invites us unworthy people to accept his call to a deeper and unconditional love. God continues to call us unworthy people to accept that challenge. So let's get past the "I'm not worthy," because none of us are worthy or deserving of God's generous love and mercy. Ultimately, none of us deserve the usual day's wage, because we have all been called just a little bit late. But fortunately, God's ways are not our ways, and God's ways are better.